Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. Virtually every day, I begin the program with the latest on health and healing. However, today, we're having an exception to that rule. Why? Because of all of the injuries and deaths, all of the suffering that has occurred around the world, where people were told that they may have COVID, do have COVID, that we're all equally risk for if you're a teenager or you're 85 years old. Anthony Fauci said we're all at the same risk of being sick, going to the hospital, or even dying. As a result, a group of draconian rules were put into place. Most people followed those. In fact, the vast majority of Americans were vaccinated multiple times. And many people, such as people working in governmental agencies and athletes, senior citizens, had multiple boosters. We were told that for each booster, you would be protected. Now we're finding out that we should have been more diligent. We should have taken our time. We should have taken between 5 to 10 years, as the normal vaccine safety and efficacy trials take, to be able to determine that indeed the RNA vaccines were safe and effective. The government has not voluntarily given this information. To the contrary, every effort to find out the truth of what did they know when they released the vaccines as far as efficacy and safety has been thwarted. It is only because of Freedom of Information Act request where a judge has said you must turn over the safety data, for example, from the FDA. But the 5,000-pound gorilla in the room is not the FDA, it's the CDC. After all, they're the ones who greenlight all of the vaccines. They frequently create the vaccines. They own patents on dozens of vaccines. They profit from it. Most of their money comes from the vaccine or pharmaceutical industry. As of today, a brand new report that was obtained through Epoch Times reporting, and we commend them for the reporting and their diligence in the legal effort, is released. I have said from the beginning, whether you vaccinate or not, it's your choice. I'll support you either way. If you get vaccinated and if you should have a side effect, whatever we can do to help you, we will. I just completed a 10.5-hour webinar, to my knowledge, the longest ever done, nonstop, with the world's leading experts on COVID and its effects and how to help people overcome those, overcoming long COVID, overcoming side effects that right now are not being helped at all. There is over 1 million Americans suffering from side effects. First, their plight was denied. Then they were told this had nothing to do with the vaccines. Then they were said, okay, it may have to do with the vaccines, but there's nothing we can do because the technology that created that vaccine, the technology that these doctors were never trained in, is creating side effects in ways that they've never seen before. And then we have all the excess mortality rates around the world, and especially in countries that had the most vaccines. It works this way. The countries in the world that gave its population the most vaccines have reported the highest adverse effects and deaths, especially deaths. But it's not just the government. It is the insurance industries that are proving through actuary statistics that if you took the vaccines, you have a greater chance of dying, especially if you're 60 years old and under. People who normally are not at risk of dying, and especially people in their 20s and 30s who don't have any, they don't have any comorbidities, and they're dying. Why? Well, these are now under a brand new title that we've never seen before in world history of unknown origin. So we have all these people dying. They're proven to have died because their families were paid their life insurance payout. But then why did they die? They shouldn't be dying. If we normally have, let's say, 1.8 million Americans dying each year from all causes, and suddenly you are up to 2.3 3 million Americans dying or 2.4 million Americans dying, and yet we don't know why they're dying. And so this has never happened before, this anomaly. But then there's a lot of scientists and physicians saying, we know why they're dying because we did the statistics. The epidemiologists look at all the deaths from 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20, and suddenly that's when these excess deaths occurred in 21. What happened in 21? The vaccines. And so you see this huge spike in deaths. Now, these are actual statistics. They're not theories. They're not conspiracy theories. So now everyone is trying to cover themselves saying, well, we don't know that. Yeah, we do know that. And but then they finally had just today released the actual analysis. I'm going to quote now from the Veris report. And this is what we've been told all along. And remember, I told you over 6 months ago that they had to reveal in the actual study before you got your vaccine, they did these clinical studies. And they had a little group of side effects that you had to check one of them or two of them. For example, if you had redness or pain in your deltoid muscle right here where you got the injection, well, that was a side effect. Okay. So I got some pain there, so you check that. Or you might have a little dizziness, you check that. But of the different ones they told you, there was only about a dozen or less side effects you could check off. But what if you had Guillain-Barré syndrome? What if you had myocarditis? It wasn't on the list. So you could have side effects that weren't on the list, and therefore they could say to the American public, the media, minor side effects, nothing, you know, transient, overcome it, no problem. Not true. They just never put on the card the vast, vast majority, probably 99% of the side effects you could have and did have, you had no place to mention it. And therefore, the government say, these are the only side effects. We had a little redness. What's the big deal? That was not unintentional, as you will see. They also tried to tell you, and I have the video clip of just this week, of Anthony Fauci being interviewed in a softball, clearly public relations interview on CBS saying, oh, myocarditis, you know, minor transient. Yeah, it comes and goes, no problem. That's an out-and-out lie. It doesn't come and go. Don't take my word for it. Look in any medical dictionary under myocarditis. It's permanent. In fact, it really shortens your lifespan. And that's why a lot of athletes, 1,700% increase in death. Once again, from 1964 to 2004, they measured deaths. And they found in that over somewhere around a 40-plus year period, there's somewhere between 27 to 37 deaths in the whole world in professional athletes each year. In soccer, which is the largest sport in the world, the most played and watched in the world, with the largest audiences and the most athletes, baseball, football, soccer, etc., all were included. And now, we had over 800 deaths last year. We've had 1,700% increase in deaths in athletes, and yet they say it has nothing to do with it. Well, then what exactly does it have to do? Why did Fauci suggest they not do autopsies? Not do autopsies. An autopsy will tell you why they died. But now the morticians are telling us why all these unnecessary deaths are happening, because they're seeing it. They're seeing blood clots that are 3 and 6 feet long, made out of some kind of gelatinous material like rubber bands. We've never seen this in world history. And now the people embalming the bodies are saying we can't even embalm the bodies because we can't get the fluid in, the embalming fluid, into the body because we can't get the blood out because these arteries and veins are clogged. So now they began to look. They began to see that these are self-organizing lipid particles that could only have come from the vaccine. I see. So now there's meetings of pathologists, and they're saying, this is from the vaccines. So we have unusual deaths, the insurance companies there. We have young athletes dropping dead. The whole world, you know, everyone watching football saw that this Sunday. And then we have the morticians telling us that these are in the person's body, and they didn't feel anything. There's no symptoms. You just drop dead. And then we have suddenly heart problems in top of the world athletes, and now they're retiring. One of the greatest defensive players in history retired this week because of a heart condition. Well, how would he had that? The vaccines. Here's the latest, and this should put to rest. For all of you who are pro-vaccine, fine. We understand. No one's criticizing you for being pro-vaccine. In fact, all the doctors I had on were pro-vaccine, and actually most of them got the vaccine. And only then did they start to do their homework and realize that they had made a mistake and everyone else had too. So this is actual CDC Veris, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System data. All right? And so this should end this argument once and for all. This is it. The House of Cards is collapsed. I'm going to quote to you some material. Some may sound very technical, but it's important you know this because they were forced to release this. Quote, summary. CDC Veris Safety Signal and Analysis based on reports from December 14, 2020 through July 29, 2022 for RNA COVID vaccines shows clear safety signals for death and a range of highly concerning thromboembolic, cardiac, neurological, hematological, immune system, menstrual adverse events among U.S. adults. There, are you ready for this? 770 different types of adverse events that showed safety signals in ages 18 plus, of which over 500 or two-thirds had a larger safety signal than myocarditis and pericarditis. We were never told this. This was hidden from us, and yet they've known it. The CDC analysis shows that the number of serious adverse events reported in less than 2 years from the RNA COVID-19 vaccines is 550% larger than all serious reports for vaccines given to adults in the United States since 2009 combined. So if you took all the vaccine adverse events and deaths from 2009 till COVID, we had a 550% higher rate than that in just this last year. Twice as many RNA COVID vaccine reports were classified as serious compared to all other vaccines given to adults. This meets the CDC definition of a safety signal. There are 96 safety signals for 12 to 17-year-olds. Let me stop there. Right now, there's not a single scientific study in the world that justifies vaccinating any child or baby or anyone else who's young. Not one. This is purely unmitigated greed. They have no science on their side, but they have power on their side. So listen again what the CDC's own report is now revealed, and they were forced to give this. Quote, there are 96 safety signals. A safety signal is a warning, a flash. Stop before you use this and understand what could happen. And that's just between 12 and 17-year-olds, which include, ready? This is what they don't tell you by giving your child a vaccine or vaccinating children in schools or colleges. Quote, myocarditis, that's not temporary, it's permanent. Pericarditis, Bell's palsy, genital ulcerations, high blood pressure and heart rate, menstrual irregularities, cardiac valve incompetencies, pulmonary embolism, cardiac arrhythmias, thrombosis, pericarditis and pleural effusion, appendicitis, perforated appendix, immune thrombocytopenia, chest pain, increased troponin levels, being in intensive care, and having anticoagulant therapy. Now, what if you're a young kid, 5 to 11 years old? Here's what they now have in their official statement. Quote, there are 66 safety signals for 5 to 10-year-olds, which include myocarditis, pericarditis, ventricular dysfunction and cardiac valve incompetencies, pericardial and pleural effusion, chest pain, appendicitis, appendectomies, Kwashiorkor disease, menstrual irregularities, vitiligo, and vaccine breakthrough infections. The safety signals cannot be dismissed as due to stimulated, exaggerated, fraudulent, or otherwise artificial inflated reporting, nor can they be dismissed due to the huge number of COVID vaccines administered. There are several reasons why, but the simplest one is this. The safety signal analysis does not depend upon the number of reports, but whether or not some are reported at a higher rate for these vaccines than the other non-COVID vaccines. Other reasons are discussed in the full post below. In August of 2022, the CDC told the Epoch Times that the results of their safety signal analysis were generally consistent with the EB, that's empirical Bayesian data mining, conducted by the FDA, revealing no additional unexpected safety signals. So either the FDA data's mining was consistent with the CDC's methods, meaning they, quote, generally found the same large number of highly alarming safety signals, or the signals they did find were expected, or they were lying. You may never know, because the FDA has refused to release their data mining results. Now, we want to thank Zachary Stiber at the Epoch Times, who managed to get the CDC to release the results of its Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System safety signaling data for COVID-19 vaccines, and they paint a very alarming picture. And the analysis over various reports for RNA COVID vaccines from the period from the vaccine rollout in December 14, 2020 through the end of July 2022. The CDC admitted to only having started its safety signaling analysis in March 25, 2022. Coincidentally, 3 days after a lawyer at Children's Health Defense Fund wrote to them, reminding them about the Freedom of Information Act request for it. So they should have been doing this from day one. They weren't. Quote, like me, you might be wondering why the CDC waited over 15 months before doing its first safety signal analysis of the Vaccine Adverse Report System, despite having said in a document posted on its website it would begin in early 2021, especially since the VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, is touted as our early warning vaccine safety system. You might also wonder how they could insist all the while that the COVID-19 vaccines are being subjected to the most rigorous safety monitoring the world has ever known, and come back and find out that's not true. And then it goes into the background information, and then there's all these charts. We have posted all this on PRN.live for you, and you'll see it all comes from a Freedom of Information Act request. And by the way, you know, we only had the Freedom of Information Act because of Ralph Nader, and the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and Clean Food Act because of Ralph Nader. In fact, over 250 different acts that protect us from unscrupulous industry or governmental agencies came because of Ralph Nader. And then they go into what is called proportional reporting ratios, and but the truth has come out. So now, just understand, and I'll just wrap this up now in lay language. From the very beginning, there has not been the rigorous safety testing. There has not been the efficacy testing. They used you and the world's population as their human guinea pigs. I wished that they would have done this because immediately they would have seen there's way too many side effects and serious side effects, and therefore they shouldn't roll out the vaccines. There are other ways of dealing with COVID, as we now know, and as every major epidemiologist has so stated, that they did everything wrong. Everything was wrong from the very beginning. I was one of the scientists, 75,000 of us, and physicians, who signed the Great Barrington Declaration, which was created by a leading epidemiologist, professor from Harvard, from Oxford University in Great Britain, and from Stanford University. And they made it very clear that the approach being taken by Fauci and the National Institutes of Health was wrong. But there was an agenda behind the scenes. And clearly, we did not know then because we did not have the evidence of the complete complicity of the CIA, the FBI, virtually all the primary platforms, Google, Facebook, in keeping any information out of the public's view that would challenge this. People were to be attacked, in fact. And that's exactly what's happened. When will you all stop listening to the major media? They lie nonstop, and now we see who motivates them, who tells them what to say, what national programs they have, how they all have the same talking points and use the same words. But when it came to this, the medicines that we could have used on those who got sick early, the most vulnerable, the older, those with comorbidities, could have saved their lives. But they were told no medication, and every doctor was warned, threatened, step down, stay down, do not treat a patient. They want to take an aspirin, all right, but nothing else until they have to go to the emergency room. That was malice aforethought that caused hundreds of thousands of people to die who didn't have to. The doctors who treated immediately, irrespective of the FDA and Fauci's demands, saved tens of thousands of lives. They were gifted and rewarded for saving tens of thousands of American lives by being ostracized, condemned, and losing their license or their board certifications or their employment. They continued to do so. Those were the real heroes, the smartest, most courageous physicians in the world. I had them all on my program on Sunday, helping people. They're still helping people who now want to help themselves overcome their side effects. And we're talking about the most serious side effects. And they're helping them. And with long COVID, they're helping them and preventing further damage by the spike protein to dissolve or block the spike protein. They're helping them. So the people who did the most at the beginning and saved lives, who've been condemned the worst, are now saving the most lives. What an irony, isn't it? So Pacifica board member, the next time you think about throwing insults and vitriol at someone who's qualified where you're not, who has the truth, where you are still supporting Fauci, please take some time and do your homework, because there's more to showing that you have a temper than exhibited in some unbridled self-righteous rage. And for all the people in the media who only had on the air pro-vaccine pundits who all were connected to Fauci or the pharmaceutical industry, shouldn't you now realize that how you were used, how you were complicit, instead of allowing open and honest and civil debate? For the next week, I will be bringing you people, all mainstream, all orthodox, all pro-vaccine, who now are apologizing because they have been awakened and they're seeing the truth. Those are the individuals that you'll be hearing over the next 5 days. As again, I apologize for not doing our health nutrition segment today, but I felt this information was more important. So please think before you vaccinate. Please think before you trust anyone. And every time Fauci appears now, remember, this man is the architect. But he is not alone. We now have just learned this week that behind all of this was the Defense Department. Not a single journalist went into there to find this out. But it's out now, and it's been proven. We've been played, we've been lied to, we've been used, we've been manipulated. And shouldn't we start to have hearings and bring in Bill Gates and bring in Anthony Fauci, bring in all the people who are so absolutely certain, and let's let them show us the science. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to play you a clip of one of the people who was in that White House, who was brought in, who worked with the National Institutes of Health, and as an expert, a professor in epidemiology. And he will tell you that, I'll just let this out of the bag because you'll see it for yourself. He's interviewed by Dr. Drew. He says that, so I asked Gottlieb as we were going up in an elevator after one of these meetings, could you show me the science on this social distancing, the six-foot thing where they're drawing circles everywhere in every restaurant and store and supermarket? And he said, kind of Fauci, not Fauci, he laughed. He said, well, we made it up. What do you mean you made it up? Yeah, we made it up. There is no science. We thought, well, should it be 1 foot, 3 foot, 12 foot, 18 foot? And we just decided that let's just make it 6 feet. No science, no studies, no proof, nothing. And that's just one of the ways they lied to us. Remember, people would get in a fight if someone got too close to them in an airport? And yet where we were supposed to stay 6 feet apart, getting your ticket to get on a plane, you sit side by side together. This is insane. This is the worst health fraud in world history. And there's been genocide. This didn't have to happen. But we're going to break it all down piece by piece. And just remember, the next time someone says, don't question Fauci, get your boosters. And I have the actual quote from someone on Pacifica's local station board who was demanding that. And with fire and brimstone, this person was going after anyone, including myself. It's their right to be critical. Fine. But be accurate. All right? And you're not. So, just remember, we've been misled. We've been lied to. And it's continuing. There are other ways that will protect you without killing you. And we'll be exploring those as well in upcoming programs. Sorry for this extended introduction to our show today. But now we're going to go to a clip right after our break, going right into it to Dr. Drew, speaking with one of the members, one of the experts who was on the COVID President's Committee, who sat right there in the building and with Fauci and everyone else, and was part of this, but now he's telling us the truth. And boy, is he angry, because he sees that all this suffering didn't have to happen. Back in a moment with Dr. Drew interviewing Professor Alexander. Please stay with us.
Well, first of all, again, thanks for having me. And I think, Dr. Drew, what we could say today after 3 years is that every single thing that was done in the Trump administration, in the pandemic response, and still the Biden's administration, they've been wrong. Nothing. The lockdowns, the school closures, the social distancing, the business closures, the mask mandates. Nothing is supported by actual science. That we can't find studies that underpin these policies. And that is one catastrophic situation by itself. But for example, like the social distancing issue, I remember Dr. Redfield worked as the director of the CDC. His main office was in Atlanta. But because of the nature of the pandemic and the response, a lot of the task force members had to go across. Health and Human Services, where I worked, that building is opposite the Capitol building. And the task force members had to brief Congress almost daily. They'd have to go next door to the White House almost daily. And so the decision was made that all of the agencies, FDA, CDC, et cetera, would have sub-offices in the building that I worked in. So Gerard, Han, Redfield, the whole group, they would be in the building, my building, daily. And because Alexei is always the head of Health and Human Services, they would be interacting with him almost daily, and the assistant secretary and all of the other directors. So I had the opportunity, it was kind of unique to meet them and to talk with them and to be in meetings. You have to understand, sir, that there are things that for executive privilege and confidentiality and stuff, I just cannot discuss.
Okay. I'm not even saying that's of course.
I'm not saying it's bad or it's good. I'm just saying the way it is.
Yeah.
I had to.
It just is. Yeah. I understand.
Yes. Good. But there are things that I've tried to say, and you know, there are sayings that you read in between the white spaces of what people write. There's so much being said. So I remember around the time, so it was around July, we had a meeting with my directors, and Dr. Redfield was one of the attendees with Dr. Han, etc. And after we were walking, he always has his aides with him, between security and his assistants. So they were walking to the elevator on the sixth floor. That's where we were. That's where the boardroom office was. And you know, I became friends with Dr. Redfield. You know, I always thought he was a decent guy and smart person. People had reservations about his work in HIV and all. I was interested in that because I just came there as a scientist dealing with the COVID issue. So we'd be talking back and forth about everything possible. So I asked him, we were talking about social distancing in the meeting, and I said, you know, Dr. Redfield, you know, can you all share with me the studies and the science that that we used in the United States to come up with the 6 feet social distancing rule? And, you know, as we walked and we got to the elevator, you know, he looked at me and he almost chuckled and he said, science, research, almost para. He said, there's no science to back that up. You know, we made it up. So, you know, I thought he was joking because he had this way of speaking that he would chuckle a lot. He's a very, very friendly, a good guy, a nice person to talk to. And I said, made it up, pretty much, made it up. Dr. Redfield, what do you mean made it up? He said, yeah, we made it up. And then he explained, he said, you know, we had this meeting because remember, I arrived in DC at the Trump administration in May. They had already formed the task force around February, March, and the social distancing rule had been set. So I said, so, okay, how did y'all make it up? And then he basically said, you know, well, in the meeting, the task force was present, so I assume he meant Burks, Han, Girard, Adams, the whole group of them, and other scientists too, and they bandied around 1 foot. Some suggested in the task force 3, some suggested 9, some suggested 6, some suggested 12. And we were still struggling whether it was droplet infection or aerosolized infection. And we still didn't have our arms around that, even though it was pointing towards aerosolized and transmission. So we felt collectively that 6 feet sounded good. So we agreed on 6 feet, and 6 feet was it. So I said, so that's it. He said, yeah, that's it. And you know something,
crazy.
Dr. Chu, you know, what was fascinating to me is, you know, about a few months after that, I think Scott Gottlieb was being interviewed, Dr. Scott Gottlieb. I think he was a prior direct, he was the prior commissioner of the FDA also. And he said that in his own words that he knew from verified sources that the social distancing rule was made up. Well, yes, because I was there also. So when he said it, I knew. Yeah. If I ever told this story, people will think, well, no, that couldn't be true. But Dr. Scott Gottlieb actually corroborated what I'm telling you here. They made it up. And it's true they made it up.
Yeah, the extraordinary, the you know, them making up a recommendation is sort of, I get it. They're doing the best they can. But the fact that it became, thus saith the Lord, and the entire world adjusted their behavior, their operations. The little stupid dots with the 6 feet on it are still all over the airport, all over the Starbucks. It is the most insane thing ever, given that we totally undid our lives to follow a policy that had no basis in science whatsoever.
Well, I mean, even today, if you ask two simple questions, has anyone involved in the pandemic from day one, today, even in the Biden administration, so 3 years, any agency ever done one basic cost-benefit analysis? You will never have a response like this or any decision-making like this without cost-benefit analyses to understand alternative courses.
Or risk-reward. Risk. Look, the vaccine is the same thing. They're unwilling to do any risk-reward sort of a – that's all I'm asking for. I want to be – how can you do informed consent without risk-reward information? You can't do it. But all right, so that's Kelly will get into that stuff. I have one other thing I want to get some more sort of clarity on, which was the lockdown itself. So now I've spoken to a number of people where the evidence is very clear, and Dr. Fauci has now said it on the record in a deposition, that the whole lockdown idea came from China, and that Dr. Fauci sent some people over. They were literally hoodwinked by Chinese scientists that I guess they were already associated with, so to speak, in terms of working on viral technologies. And that then became the other thus saith the Lord that had no basis, was strictly speaking a political maneuver on behalf of the Chinese Communist Party, had no evidence basis for it whatsoever. They, you know, claimed success, but shouldn't there have been a certain amount of healthy skepticism on part of the CDC? And then that became thus saith the Lord. Am I getting that right?
Yes, because exactly correct. And the thing is that, first of all, we should not have believed what China said in terms of their success with it, because even when you look at the epidemic curves from back then, you saw that curve flat with no infections. So it didn't look like any other epidemic curve, number one. Number two, from China, Italy followed that model, and they began lockdowns. And I believe then the United States started. We did it on March 16th. But at that point, Dr. Drew, there was no science. There was no study. There was nothing available to show that this would be of any benefit in curbing transmissions or death. In fact, WHO had written a guidance document in 2019 showing that lockdowns, etc., is not one of the strategies that you would use in a pandemic, influenza pandemic situation. In fact, Dr. Donald Henderson, who eradicated smallpox, had written a paper about pandemic responding in 2006, and he has passed away, where he said that basically that the only thing, the only steps that we really take, and this is what we always knew, is you isolate and you quarantine
sick people. Sick people.
Period. Nothing else. You do nothing else. You leave the society alone, and you deal. You basically, and that was part of the Great Barrington Declaration, and that's what Scott Atlas, Dr. Atlas, and myself were saying. We were saying, while at the White House, simple. What you need to do is isolate sick people. You protect the vulnerable. So that's granting in nursing homes and in your private homes. You take steps, but you allow the complete vast rest of society to live free. That's it. And
as we'll just call that plan. Let's just pull a name out of the hat. Let's just call it Florida.
Yeah.
I'm not a medical doctor, but that's what I thought they should do.
That's what essentially what they did in Florida. Once they now I understand. Now listen, I want to be
you remember?
Fair.
I said it over and over.
No, I know. I said the same thing. I want to be fair that there was a fog of war. There was a lot of panic. They were using fear to cow the public, and of course, the public freaked out. And you know, there was some lack of clarity, and I get people were preparing for the worst case. And I was very willing to comply with my leader's decision making, but after 6 months of that, it got ridiculous. It got ridiculous, and the use of fear along the way began to disgust me. saying things like shelter in place. I mean, this is things you tell people when a nuclear missile is approaching. Where did that idea, where did that language even come from? Was that also from Washington, or was that just, we heard it a lot in California. Is that something that California came up with?
That originated also from Washington, from Brooks et al. And her team. And the truth of the matter is, Dr. Drew, that when you said that by about 6 months, look, 2 to 3 weeks out, by around the first week of April, second week of April 2020, we were already getting data across the world that showed that COVID was amenable to risk stratification, and that baseline risk, your baseline risk, was prognostic on your mortality and severity of outcome. Meaning, we knew that there was a very steep age risk age curve, that very young was at appreciably minimal, if any, risk compared to the elderly, and that a focused protection approach was needed. That's it. Not a carte blanche approach, as they did. There was a 1,000-fold difference in risk of death between an 85-year-old and a 10-year-old back then. But they lied to us. Fauci and Burks, still knowing this, because we knew this. We knew the data already. We were actually getting data from China itself that was showing us that when Fauci went on the news and he said, well, we are equal. This was the one statement that hobbled President Trump's pandemic response. And I'm not absolving him from blame. I have to be honest. I'm not absolving anyone. I'm just saying, when they said that we are all at equal risk of severe outcome if exposed, irregardless of age and risk profile, that was a lie. Because how could you say a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old is at the same risk? And that was what stuck in the head of parents and women, particularly mothers, that everybody went nuts from that statement, and they kept saying it, and people got scared, and people started to act very rationally.
Okay, and it goes on. You can continue watching and listening to it on PRN.live. Now, I'm giving you this information because now, 3 years into this, we are finding out irrefutable evidence. For example, we should never have had the lockdown the way we did. Think of all the people who were not infected, who would not have spread it to other people, who were young, healthy, and 40% of all young, healthy people got COVID and either manifested few or no symptoms, but there was no mortality rate. It was still a 0.01% or something like that. So it did not justify locking them down. It did not justify closing schools. It did not justify wearing the mask, because once again, we have the study showing there was no benefit to the masks. Now, a shield, the one I wear, yes, or a plastic cover over the whole face, yes, that will prevent all forms of particulate matter from getting into your nasal cavities, and that's where most of the virus manifests. That's why if you feel you've been exposed, go to a drugstore, buy yourself a nasal solution, it's a flush, and then put a little bit of hydrogen peroxide or a little bit of colloidal silver in there, and that will kill off. And you do that 3 or 4 times a day, and you're really destroying the massive amount of virus you might have been exposed to. But we didn't tell people to do that. We told everybody the same thing. And as a result, everyone around the world, businesses closed, and you realize how many of those businesses closed never reopened. And you realize how many people didn't have to pay rent, but then couldn't pay the rent when it was suddenly the moratorium was lifted and they didn't have the money to pay the back taxes or rent, and they were thrown out. And think of all the people that needed social interactions in person and couldn't do it and ended up depressed, killing themselves. 100,000 people alone died because of alcohol. Then throw in another 100,000 from drugs, fentanyl and OxyContin. Then throw in suicides. Then throw in people who became obese and had comorbidities. Then think of all the people that were terrified to go to the hospital because they couldn't have non-elective surgery. Think of the people who didn't get their cancer treatments, diabetic treatments, or heart treatments, their other treatments for other conditions because they were afraid, because the beds were reserved for those people who had full COVID. So everything we did wrong. Every single thing was wrong. Now, we're going to go through in the next several days what was real wrong, but I want you to listen to this coming up. because this is really, this is the capstone. You haven't heard this, you didn't know this, and this is going to be particularly an assault against the false narrative that trust Fauci, trust the people in charge, that vaccines are safe and effective. They were never tested for safety and effectiveness, according to the person. By the way, this person has a formidable background. We've checked it. We've gone into depth. And this is quality information, as shocking as it may sound. And this is the most important piece of information I'm sharing with you, aside from the fact that we now have, under force of lawsuit, gotten the actual statistics and showed you that there wasn't just 8 or 9 or 10 minor insignificant side effects. No, there were over 700, and the majority were even worse than myocarditis. Now you see all these times have been playing, showing you people who are suffering side effects, and nobody in the media wants to know that. Nobody in Congress wants to know that. No federal agency is willing to acknowledge it. And these are the silent voices. Now let's go to the clip.
Today, I wanted to talk about this topic, intent to harm, and it covers various aspects of what has been going on for the past, 2.5 years visibly, but there's been a lot of preparation and planning for this to happen, and how we can think about this criminal cartel, or we should call it enterprise, because actually it is officially a government, U.S. government enterprise. It's called COVID enterprise, or PEMC. And we will talk about it some more. Let's discuss a summary. In the summary slide, I want to say what exists today as a summary of all evidence and that we have been able to gather. And all of this evidence points to intent to harm. I'm not going to have enough time to discuss, you know, toxicity, safety, efficacy. That's been covered very extensively by many researchers. But we know today that these shots, so-called vaccines, have been designed to be toxic. The mechanisms are extensively documented and demonstrated. And in lay terms, they basically instruct the cells of your body to attack themselves and destroy themselves. There is absolutely no safety. In fact, we see horrific deaths and injury toll in all databases that exist, such as, you know, VAERS, VSAFE, Hydrovigilance, Yellow Card, many, many other databases for pharmacovigilance are pointing to the same thing. We have millions of reports in the U.S., approximately over a million extra deaths have happened in the last 2 years, about 600,000 a year of extra deaths, and unfortunately in the younger people and in children too. There is no efficacy. We have numerous reports, and now most recently Cleveland Clinic published a report showing that the more injections you have, the more likely you have to you are going to have COVID, and this is in the young and otherwise healthy population of their employees. There is absolutely horrific manufacturing. I've covered this extensively. I call it very bad manufacturing practices, as opposed to current good manufacturing practices, which is the law in the United States, and there are similar laws all over the world. These products are being produced completely non-compliant to these sets of laws, and so there is absolutely no assurance what goes into those shots, and absolutely anything can be found there. All of this is supported by malignant policy worldwide. Governments are lying, covering up, gaslighting. They're actually all acting from the same script, it seems like. They're gaslighting the injured. They're prosecuting any dissent from the medical community, any whistleblowers. And, of course, they're colluding with the mass media. And there is a substantial and very perverse funding of all of the above. And in about a day, our Congress is going to approve yet another couple of trillion of spending to maintain this criminal cartel.
Right, the omnibus bill.
Yes. So at this point, if you see all of that, or if you don't see it, I feel really sorry for you. If you do see it, you're probably screaming and you're saying, you know, why there's no action? And obviously all of this is wrong. And why no action by the regulators or by the courts? And here's the explanation why. So I'm borrowing a lot of very deep legal research by Catherine Watt, who writes very important Substack. It's called Bailiwick News. I suggest everyone subscribe to her. She has an encyclopedia of law traced back to early 1900s on this matter. But I'm going to cover just very key pieces of it and more recent ones. So the first piece of pseudo-law that we have to consider is emergency use authorization in the United States. It was put in place in 97 under Clinton, and it gets rid of FDA safety and efficacy regulations under this framework. Now, originally, as all these things go, it was very limited to certain situations, and there are at least some criteria that apply to this, most important one being that there are no existing treatments for this condition. And that's why, that explains why there was such a perverse and massive campaign to suppress early treatments for COVID, because they needed to satisfy this criteria. They needed to pretend like there were no treatments for COVID, and that's why they massively suppressed hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and other treatments and other treatment protocols, and prosecuted every doctor who tried to treat their patients. So that's one piece of legislation that's important here. The second one is not many people know about it, but you should read up on it. And this is really critical for how all of this crime can be committed. It's called other transaction authority. It was put in place a long time ago, amended most recently under Obama in 2015. And this particular way of contracting, I'll discuss it in more detail, but it enables Department of Defense, among other government agencies, to order undisclosed military prototypes from private manufacturers, such as pharmaceutical companies. And finally, what clicks this whole structure into place is PREP Act and Public Health Emergency Declaration. PREP Act was also put in place before 2020. It was particularly bulletproof and updated, amended with deep participation from Robert Kudlick, who was Assistant Secretary of Pandemic Preparedness and Response under Trump. And then during early 2020, Trump announced public health emergency under Stafford Act, which also has never been used before in the United States. And when this happens, when we have a public health emergency, all of this thing, this cage, clicks into place and covers everyone. So let's look at other transaction authority. So other transaction authority, as I said, this is a way for Department of Defense to order military prototypes and bypass any regulation that applies to regulated companies such as pharmaceutical companies. So this is very, very important to understand. This particular way of contracting originally was put in place in the U.S. in the 60s. Now it expanded to 11 government agencies, and the Department of Defense is particularly fond of these things because it allows them to, as I said, bypass any regulations that apply to otherwise regulated products, such as pharmaceutical or biotech or devices or pretty much anything, and just call it prototype and a demonstration. And another very critical piece of law, and that's why I'm just quoting it here. So once the public health emergency is announced, then this comes into play. According to this law in the U.S., use of emergency use covered medical countermeasures, once they're designated as such by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, which happened on March 10th, 2020. Shall not be considered to constitute a clinical investigation. So during public health emergency, when medical countermeasures ordered by DOD under OTA used in the emergency use authorized manner, they are not pharmaceuticals. So the biggest lie perpetrated on American citizens and people worldwide was by our regulatory authorities worldwide, who were pretending to regulate these products. They have no authority to regulate these products because they cannot be clinical investigational product. So the clinical trials, so-called clinical trials, and research and development, so-called research and development, those are performance art. They're fake. They don't exist. For these things, which are not pharmaceutical products, those exercises, such as clinical trials and research and development activities, do not apply. Now, what does apply? How do they get deployed, these products? Well, turns out there isn't really any criteria for how they get deployed. It's basically, again, based on the same piece of law from the U.S., this is entirely, you know, to the discretion of the HHS Secretary, Health and Human Service Secretary, during HHS declared public health emergency. So there's no criteria to declare public health emergency. As you remember, WHO, unelected, unaccountable, private organization, pronounced somewhere that we have novel coronavirus, a pandemic based on 40 cases out of 8 billion people in the world. So they decided it's a pandemic. And then all of them, like,
okay, I hope you were watching it, because she put up charts, official government charts, and showing the games they play. Because who goes back and finds the laws that actually established who has authority? We assume the authority is the FDA, the CDC, the World Health Organization, U.S. public. We assume this. And she's showing, along with a lawyer that is engaged in the scholarship working on this for a long period of time, that they lied about everything. The person that actually developed all this was the Defense Department. Yeah, you never once heard the Defense Department's name mentioned. And as far as giving you informed consent, it's voluntary. They don't have to. They didn't tell you that either. And all the studies, why don't you do this? If you doubt her, why don't you contact any of the pharmaceutical Pfizer and say, do you have your own in-house plants that are manufacturing these vaccines? The answer is no. Everything was outsourced. Well, who were the people who were it was being outsourced? That's where this woman spent 25 years of her life. She was a company that then took contracts and for the quality control to see if a particular drug or vaccine was being manufactured properly. So she's an expert in this area, and she's saying it's just terrible. The quality control is simply non-existent. You're getting junk, and we've seen that. We've had a tiny smattering of this come out. Just want to share that with you. So at every level, we've been had. Now, bring her in. Bring her associate, who's a lawyer, and this other woman. Let them bring their evidence. Then bring in every one of the executives of every one of these companies, including the companies that are actually making the product, and see how many of those have been closed down, shut down, given warning, show that they had bad product. What, did you hear anyone recalling all the product? What happened when it was supposed to be kept a certain 58 degrees below zero and suddenly it warmed up? Did we hear about any of those? And then you see the side effects. But she said something more important. By the way, we've got to say goodbye to BAI so they can go to their news. We're going to continue at the top of the hour, and you can call in and share your points of view at 888-874-4888. She said that as long as a company could not prove that they had a product that could help people with COVID, then the FDA could use its emergency use authorization. And she showed in the, if you're watching, if you watched her, you saw the actual act, which meant that as long as there's another product out there or products that can treat a person with COVID successfully, you cannot get an emergency use authorization. Ah, now, let me just show you how you got to put this together. On the one hand, we're told for the first time in American history, every doctor, no matter what your specialization, if you have a patient comes in who's got neurological problems and has COVID, heart problems who has COVID, who has renal problems who has COVID, or lung problems have COVID, you cannot treat them, even if you're a specialist and historically have treated thousands of patients with drugs that are available. You're told to stand down. Not just specialists, every single doctor in America. You're demanded, stand down. Don't treat them. They want to take an aspirin, fine, but they go home, they stay quarantined, and then when they're too sick, then they can be moved to a hospital. More often than not, they'll be intubated, which has a very high death rate, and they should have had hyperbaric oxygen therapy, but of course, these are the so-called best and brightest, and they kind of miss that. And it, because if you've got hyperbaric oxygen therapy, then suddenly we saw resuscitation and all kinds of improvements. And intubation, no. And then they would give you remdesivir, one of the most toxic drugs ever, and yet no one has questioned, were there any human studies done on remdesivir in the United States? The answer is no. Where were the studies? What was about Ebola in Africa? And there were as many as 52 to 54% death. I see. Well, what better way to put it into everyone's body? And that was Fauci. In any case, so now we have every doctor being told, don't treat a patient. The doctors then say, well, hold on, I can treat a patient. We don't want you to. Then suddenly something comes that has never happened before. Two of the most popular, safe drugs in the history of medicine. Actually, one won the Nobel Prize, and that's ivermectin. You're told you can't use them. Not only are you told you can't use them, but the state medical board says anybody using could lose their license. Well, now you put fear in the hearts of doctors. But still, there were about 500 more or less doctors who were treating patients in the very beginning with what they knew might work, and it did work, and they saved hundreds of thousands of lives. One doctor alone treated 10,000 people early on using ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, monoclonal antibody steroids, azithromycin, vitamin D, and high-dose vitamin D, I think it was 100,000 units, first dose, vitamin C, quercetin, and zinc, and all 10,000 patients survived. That should have made headline news. Every newspaper in the country should have had that doctor and his clinic directors on and said, you just saved 10,000 people's lives who had COVID, not just tested positive for COVID, but actually had COVID symptoms. What did you do? Instead, the person was attacked. Then everyone in the media, especially Rachel Maddow, wow. I nominate Rachel Maddow to be the next head of the U.S. Public Health Service, irrespective because she is of her background, because, boy, is she a mouthpiece for the status quo. And so remember her saying, and I got the clip if you don't remember it, get the vaccine and you won't spread it to other people and your life will go back to normal and you won't get it and you won't go to the hospital and you won't die. Everyone kept saying the same thing, but they also attacked remdesivir. This is just a horse dewormer. It wasn't. It was called the Sunday-to-Sunday drug in Africa. Why do you think so many people in Africa were susceptible to COVID but didn't hospitalize or die because they were taking this? So now we understand better why there was attack against any other treatment, because of any other treatment like specifically hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin was shown to help people, then no manufacturer could have brought out the vaccine because they would not have the authority to do it because there were other competing drugs. And these were off-label, non-patented drugs, 2 to 3 cents to make a pill instead of thousands of dollars for the regular treatment. The fix was in, and that's where intrepid journalists should do their homework. It's all laid out there, but nobody was putting the pieces together. And so all the doctors helping people were attacked, licenses threatened or taken away. Drugs that were known to be safe and effective were banned, and you couldn't get them. And yet no dialogue because the science, Anthony Fauci, had spoken. And now we find out it was the Defense Department that controlled everything. Really honest people. I mean, they were honest about Vietnam, Afghanistan. They've been honest about, I don't think they've ever lied about anything or misrepresented anything, right? And they've never killed an innocent civilian, right? Never. Ask Barack Obama. No, when he had his death kill list on Tuesday mornings with the National Security Directorate, they decided just to kill the bad people, and they did. Yeah. And people actually believe this nonsense. You've been had. You've been lied to. Now, you may not care. You may be indifferent, or you may be one of those defiant ones who said, I don't care what the truth is. I care about my ideology. Okay. Just remember, people will lie about all this and caused 8 million people to die who didn't have to, cause the wrecking and destroying of countless lives and businesses and the economy. And now they've been shown by all the people that used to work on it, including Alexander. Paul Alexander was one of them. And he's telling you nothing. You heard what he said. Nothing they told us was true. And now they're coming out of the woodwork to tell you the truth. At what point do you say, I better pay attention to this? because these are the very same people and organizations that want to control my life. And they're all connected to the World Economic Forum. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.